Welcome to the Evocative Exchange, where we meet with go-getters who have that X factor, a way of meeting today's challenges with bold and evocative solutions. We'll share what keeps these experts thinking, thriving, and feeling inspired in design, entrepreneurial life, healthcare marketing, and beyond. Today, on the Evocative Exchange, we welcome Nick DiStefano, resilience and leadership speaker. So awesome Nick D, as everyone calls him, is a problem solver who specializes in turning stressful situations into opportunities for growth. Thought leadership keynotes and workshops, this is what Nick does best. It's how he communicates. He's helping companies to improve employee engagement by cultivating resilience. So I want to welcome you, Nick. Welcome to the Evocative Exchange.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to get on here with you and make this an awesome podcast recording and episode for all of your listeners.
Yeah, without a doubt. There's so much in your background that's interesting. I think we need to do a level set, right?
Sure.
Can you share your career evolution and then ultimately what inspired you to focus your public speaking and consulting on resilience?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I was born on April 15th, 19. Actually, I don't think that's where you want me to go with this. So I have been speaking since I was in college. Actually, my first job that I ever had where I got to speak was working for the AAA affiliate of the New York Yankees, the Scranton Wilkes-Barre Yankees. I was their on-field entertainment MC for 6 summers. It didn't take me 6 summers to graduate college, but I was there for 6 summers working with them. And that was really the first time I fell in love with speaking in front of a group of people. From there, I made the move from Pennsylvania down to South Carolina, where I started working in leadership training at Coastal Carolina University. And there I fell in love with working with college students and the untapped human potential that so many college students show and have to offer and the energy that they bring. And I loved talking with them and encouraging them to be the best leader that they could possibly be in the organizations where we got to work with them and just as students in general and for when they graduated. So that all happened really in about 2011 and 2016. While I was there, I founded my business, DiStefano Leadership. And I started working with colleges and universities, attending different leadership seminars and workshops and teaching them how to be the best leader they could possibly be. And it was tons of fun. I did that for about 2 to 3 years. And during that time, my oldest son, Calvin, was born. And Calvin is, we found out in 2018, he's actually on the autism spectrum. And that was really the first time that I thought, I need to reevaluate and change maybe what I'm speaking about.
Wow.
I had seen students for years kind of struggle with adversity. I'd seen students struggle with, you know, any loss in their life, even just the simple resilience of maybe failing their first class or their first test. And I had seen students struggle with that. And then it hit me personally as a professional and as a dad when I found out I don't know what my kid's life is going to be like moving forward. But I want him and I want students everywhere and young professionals. And really, this is all of your listeners and anyone worldwide. Yeah. We should all be, as I would like to say in my now signature keynote, is chasing the awesome life. So chasing the awesome life, or C-A-L for short, is named in honor of Cal. I truly believe that he's taught me about what resilience really looks like, what leadership and service looks like, which is amazing. He's now 8 years old. He's in third grade. He's doing really well. He has daily struggles. You know, the days are long.
Exactly.
He's taught me about the importance of kindness and leadership and resilience. And I use that in my work every single day now.
I think that's just an incredible story. And, you know, you just don't ever know what gets people to where they are right in today, in this moment. And I think with that kind of passion, I mean, it's so personal. And also, you know, when we're working with people and they feel like, yeah, I'm having this struggle, I'm having this challenge, it feels like the end of the world. You really understand what that looks like every single day. So I think you're really coming from a realistic place. And I just want to draw a bridge right now to how did you end up working with companies and executives and leaders and corporations? When did that come into play?
Yeah, so about the time that COVID hit, you know, and, you know, the world came along and said, watch this, hold my beer, right? And right? we were like, okay, what is this going to look like now? Honestly, full transparency, a lot of my work in colleges and universities stopped.
Sure.
And I actually made a transition from working with those colleges and universities to reaching out to businesses and organizations. And a lot of it was to where I was professional. You know, I was getting older and I was seeing a lot of my students graduate and they were still struggling with the same things. I began to realize that young adults and young professionals, if they didn't get to attend sessions like I was offering with colleges and universities, they came into the workforce and they still don't have the skills necessary to be resilient. They're probably not viewing themselves as a leader, whether they work in healthcare or any other organization. They're not getting the skills before they get to the organization to be resilient and to be that leader that we need them to be as we move forward. And I just felt like it was a massive gap that was missing. I'll be honest, it's been a big transition for me, and I still do a lot of work with colleges and universities, but right. Trying to get into that nonprofit and for-profit world it's that in itself, I have to practice what I preach, that same resilience, you know, the amount of times that I try to reach out to people and say, these are things that I think would be helpful for your organization, and people don't know who I am or don't know why it's important. And, you know, I get more no's than I get yeses in terms of the work that I'm doing. And that's the life of an entrepreneur.
Without a doubt.
So I'm, you know, it's oftentimes that practicing what I preach and walking the talk. I can't say that part of the awesome life framework is that you walk the talk and then not do it myself.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think people respond to that too. A lot of your cues are really personal and really fun. And I think that it's what makes people listen and then engage and then learn. So, you know, you mentioned skill building, and to me, skill building is the biggest thing missing today in corporate America. We put a lot of time and a lot of money into being reactive, to the extent where even to have policies and HR problems and things, right? All the money and all the attention is going in defending, when half of that money and attention went into preparation and the skill building, then we would see things go a lot differently. So I'm 100% in favor of really focusing on how do I build whatever it is, resilience, leadership, you know, toughness, mental toughness, whatever it is. So my question for you is, I mean, here we are, it's December is right here. What should supervisors be doing? What should organizations be doing as they contemplate and set goals for the new year? What kind of skill building should they put on the agenda so that their teams can become resilient and all the other things that stem from that?
Donna, that question is awesome. And I think it's a question that all organizations, regardless of industry, should be thinking about is what skills do our employees need? And I would say the first thing that needs to happen is when more organizations need to do assessments of what their employees and their supervisors actually need. If I were to ask your listeners, raise your hand if you've ever been put into the position of being a manager or supervising people and given the all of the tools that you need and all of the training that you need to be successful, very few of them would raise their hand. We do a really poor job of training our managers and our supervisors first and foremost. So I would say most organizations need to start there, and we need to train our managers and our supervisors on more than just the logistics of payroll and HR and the things that are necessary for operations, which is where we focus. And we don't train them on how to have the tough conversations. We don't train them on how to do reward and recognition. Some people are great at it, and other people are just awful at it, and they don't know how to do it or even where to start. There should be training for managers and supervisors on what should be asked of employees, how to do things like stay interviews, where we're actually talking to employees regularly and having one-on-one conversations with them about what's important to them and what matters to them. I've got a resource, and you know, I'll offer it to any of your listeners if they want. It's the top 25 questions that I think all managers should be asking their employees regularly. So that's where I would start, is with the managers. And on that, I don't want to take the rest of the podcast talking about it, but I could go on for a long time about the skills. That's for managers. There's a whole nother set of skills that we could be teaching our employees, whether it's how to be a leader, how to be more resilient, how to handle adversity, how to have crucial conversations. But I would say assess your employees, start having conversations about what do they think they need.
Well, I think that's a very straightforward and simple methodology, is to say, hey, have your leadership team take a look at these 25 questions, and then we'll go from there. Because when they're in these conversations with their employees, they might be surprised to hear what they're going to get as the feedback. Sometimes we just need to know what questions to ask. So I think from that perspective, I think that is a good place to start. And it's something that's accessible. I appreciate you sharing that. We're definitely going to talk later about how people can get that information.
And you know, Donna, I have to say too, in one of my workshops and keynotes that I do, I ask, you know, and sometimes I do them with managers and sometimes I do them with frontline employees. But one of the questions I ask of our supervisors, I do a session called Your Guide to Becoming a Resilient Supervisor. And I ask them, what excites your employees about coming to work every day? And they're all really excited to answer it. And they give me answers and we have great conversation about it, but it's always, I think my employees fill in the blank. I'm pretty sure my employees fill in the blank. And it's just, it's illustrates the fact that we don't do a good enough job of actually asking a question as simple as, what excites you about coming to work every day?
I'm relieved that they actually had an answer. I thought you were going to say, they said, I have no idea, right?
Well, if they have no idea, they usually are just quiet.
Right. But you know, it's funny, right? As a supervisor, as a leader, you do have a certain perspective. And if you don't validate that perspective, you could be way off track in a very short period of time. So I want to talk about the way that you engage, because I think it's really interesting. It is exciting. It's fun. It's dynamic. You talk in your workshops about people beginning in a certain way, and it's a little off the path, right? Like, you, not everyone would think that this is going to be something they're going to hear about, but you begin by asking people to shed the pain of their fears, failures, and faults. What does that look like?
It's uncomfortable. That's what it looks like. So one of the things I do when I speak is I start my presentations with a backpack on. And most people kind of just look at it. And we usually go about 10, 15 minutes of me telling some stories before I ask people, you know, how many of you are sitting here wondering, why does this guy have a backpack on? And everyone's hands
go up. It's my lunch.
You know? I joke in my TED talk when I wore it before, I said, you know, it's not a parachute, although it looks like it could be. But people that, you know, they get curious about it. And I think we need to be more curious about ourselves and what we struggle with and be more willing to talk about it, which is why I intentionally don't talk about the backpack for the first 10 to 15 minutes. I tell another story. And the reason I do that is because the backpack is apparent, but you don't know what's inside it. The backpack is actually weighted. So I carry a backpack with 30 pounds in it to represent the fact that we don't recognize what other people are carrying at any given time. And that's those pain, fears, failures, faults, the things we struggle with. And resilience for me starts with self-awareness. At the end of the day, we can't be resilient until we're aware of what we're good at, what we struggle with, what are the things that I'm afraid of, what are the times that I've failed and I've overcome them in the past. So I answered your question by saying it's uncomfortable, because the reality is, I jokingly say when you come to one of my sessions, I'm sorry you didn't know you were coming to therapy, but your employer signed you up for an hour-long therapy session. Now's your opportunity to leave if you want. No one ever does. But we ask you to reflect and to sit and to think about, what are the things that I've overcome in my life? What are the things that I'm genuinely afraid of? And then at the same time, what excites me about coming to work? Like, what are my passions? What am I good at? Because they go hand in hand. And it's, if we just think about the good, we can't have the, if we just think about the bad, we can't have the good. So
without a doubt, I love physical analogies, right? So the backpack really speaks to me. And when we're giving out these 25 questions that you should be asking your employees, I think if people can visualize that the backpack, that they're asking the 25 questions to find out what's in the backpack.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, and the thing is, the backpack is so different for every single one of your employees. Of course. Everyone that's walking through this world has something different that they're carrying, which is why, you know, at the end of the day, I preach being kind. Like, leadership for me is about kindness. And, you know, it's why my wife and I got tattooed on our wrists when my son turned 8. We got his handwriting tattooed to say, be kind, on our wrists, because it's a reminder every single day that I don't know what other people are carrying and I need to treat them with kindness. And if we do that for our employees, and we do that for ourselves, we're going to be much more able to, as I would say, chase the awesome life and to show up to work and enjoy work and want to be there and be our best selves. And that's what everyone wants.
Without a doubt. And it definitely brings it full circle. It's a really cohesive and comprehensive look, right, at what people really need to be happy, right? Because we're not going to work just to make money, to pay the mortgage, you know, drive the car, get gas, whatever. But we want to be happy and fulfilled. And so I'm wondering about resilience, right? So I want to ask, like, what are maybe 2 or 3 skills that then lead to resilience? And you did just speak about kindness. And I think that that's fantastic. What else? If you just had to give us 2 more examples.
So I would say another skill that a lot of people don't necessarily think of as a skill when it comes to resilience is, I said self-awareness before, but I think being able to be self-aware is a skill. It takes practice. I think that's a major factor in resilience. I also think another piece of resilience is the skill of being vulnerable enough to ask for help. A lot of people think resilience is all about toughness and how can I overcome this? And there's this like visual of grittiness and someone going through the hardest day that they've ever been through in their life. And that's absolutely where I have learned some of my resilience skills, is times when, you know, things have gone really wrong. I remember when I found out that my kid had autism, but it changed my life in a good way because it allowed me and taught me the skill of being vulnerable enough to say, I don't know what I'm doing here. I have a lot to learn as a father. I have a lot to learn as a human being. And I think we could all do a better job of being willing to ask for help. It's why one of the things we do in my keynotes and in my workshops is I don't carry the backpack for 60 minutes. 1, because I would be a sweaty mess. And 2, because I'm a sweaty mess after 15 minutes of carrying that thing. But I ask for people to come up and be a volunteer and to take turns holding the backpack and sharing the weight of what it is. And if we are so tightly wrapped around what is inside that backpack and unwilling to unpack it and be vulnerable enough to open up to someone and say, this is what I have going on, this is what I need help with, then that backpack is going to crush us. And that's a skill of being able to be vulnerable enough to say, I need some help. And when our supervisors and our managers are able to create an environment and create and build a relationship with their people where they go first, and that's leadership, right? Leadership is the ability to go first and say, hey, I struggle with this too. Like, this is what's in my backpack. What's in yours? What, let's do this together so that neither one of us is carrying it alone, because that's powerful.
I was just thinking about that. You know, sometimes the leadership team will have all this skill building for the employees, but then who's asking them 25 questions? And that was such a great point that you just made, is that the self-awareness comes when you're able to express what you wouldn't normally think of bringing up. And so having someone engage you in disclosing that, I think, is really powerful. And I mean, also, I think what I'm envisioning is, you know, as someone is helping their team member, their direct report, to disclose, maybe they'll meet them halfway and they'll disclose some too, right? Is that what you're thinking?
Absolutely. It is 100% modeling the way. You know, when we think about leadership, a lot of times we think of a role model and a person who we kind of, I think oftentimes we put them up on a pedestal and we say, this is what leadership looks like. And the reality is, like, leadership is getting down there and stepping off of the pedestal that your people have placed you on and letting them see you as a human.
Right.
And like, that's at the end of the day, like, that's, you know, that's being kind to yourself and also being vulnerable at the same time and saying, I'm struggling with this too. Like, oftentimes we see our managers, we see the people that are above us as someone that we aspire to be. And that's not a bad thing, but there's nothing wrong with that manager stepping down or stepping back and saying,
truth,
I'm human too. Like, this isn't easy for me to say, but like, I struggle with managing my time. I struggle with getting through all of my emails in a day. Like, I'm not going to get this done today, and apologizing for it, but then also kind of setting that expectation of I'll get it done tomorrow. Right. So some of it too is, you know, it's humanity, but it's some of it is also around setting expectations and being clear in how we communicate.
Agree. Self-awareness, so important to becoming resilient. And there's another word for that. I don't know how similar or different you describe it from emotional intelligence, but definitely the buzzword of the past decade.
You know, it's funny. I love thinking about self-awareness as part of emotional intelligence. Okay. I think emotional intelligence is a combination of being self-aware, but also being able to recognize your impact on the other people. Because some people are really self-aware. They know what they're great at. They know what they struggle with, but they're really poor at recognizing other people's emotions and recognizing how the things that they do and the way they show up, how it impacts other people. And I think that's where, for me, which is why I think resilience and leadership go hand in hand, because it's the ability to be self-aware and also recognize how I am showing up and impacting the people around me, which to me is leadership.
Yeah, without a doubt. The there's so much really in this topic, but I like the way how you've kind of honed in, right? It's about skill building. And I think it's particularly important when we're looking at the generations that are coming out of college today. There's so much happening on the college campuses. So you've worked with young adults. You've come up through this process. I'm just like wondering, like, what is it that you're thinking about what these students are facing? And
it's a lot. You know, we've never been more connected in 2023, almost 2024, in the world that we live in. Then at the same time, like, we have workforces that have never been this disengaged, right? And if we're connected, we should be engaged, but we have this generation that cares so much about purpose, right? Generation Z and millennials are focused on our purpose and what's the reason we are at this job, or what's our purpose on this earth and why do we do this? And yet at the same time, we also have the largest mental health crisis that we've ever had. And I think if we did a better job of creating spaces where people could have genuine and honest and authentic and vulnerable conversations, if we had more employees who went to work and graduated college and could go to a job where they have purpose and also have a manager who cares about them as a human and not just as someone who's there to produce a result or an outcome, we would better serve our college students and then also our young professionals. You know, there's just, I think we'd have less of a mental health crisis if we were more willing to talk about our faults, our failures, the things that help us to be resilient, the things that we're not good at. If we talked about those more regularly, we would be more prepared for when the fit hits the shan. Like
well, it certainly has. You know, I will say that.
Absolutely. And you know what? It's going to continue to, right? Like it's a messy world out there and it ain't getting clean anytime soon. It's up to each of us individually to create spaces where we can actually feel comfortable and safe, right? And creating psychological safety in our work environments is so essential. I firmly believe that everyone on this earth can be more prepared to handle adversity or conquer adversity, but you're never going to be ready for that moment. It's a major thing to think about when that thing is going to go wrong, right? When the other shoe's going to drop, when the carpet's going to get ripped out from underneath you. You never know when it's going to happen. And if you don't prepare for it in advance, that's why I think we have such a mental health crisis, because we don't talk about how to handle our emotions and own them and to put the backpack on, so to speak, and say, like, this is uncomfortable. It's supposed to be uncomfortable. We need to move forward. You can't pretend the backpack doesn't exist. Like, if we don't talk about that in advance of someone actually handing you the backpack's going to crush you every single time. And that's why I think we have a mental health crisis.
Well, and I think it goes back to what I said earlier, is we're putting a lot of time and energy and money into dealing with repercussions.
Yes.
As opposed to getting in front of it. And that makes me wonder at what juncture, at what age, at what stage of the academic career and a student do we need to get the backpack out? Like, when's it soon enough to get in front of these crises?
Yeah, that's a great question. I truly think that by the time a student is a sophomore in high school, that sounds probably a little younger than what you were thinking, but we should be giving them opportunities to fail. And it doesn't have to be something difficult. If your kid is uncomfortable having conversations, then the next time you want to go out to dinner, it's their responsibility to pick up the phone and call the restaurant and make the reservation. That's not, you're not going to die. It's uncomfortable. It's difficult for some kids at that age, but you know what it is as the parent or the educator should know their students well enough to know, okay, I need to push this one in this sort of way and challenge them to get outside of their comfort zone. That's such a simple example, but if you are forced to do that several times, you're going to become more comfortable with it. The more you wear the backpack, the more normal it becomes.
Truth, I think it happens a lot, Rick, with kids that are in sports. I mean, they're kicking a soccer ball at 4 years old, and they're having failures every single day.
Yeah.
And I think we need to get beyond that. We can't depend on that. Not every kid's going to be in sports, and try to have some parallel where they do get that chance, as you said, to fail. And then they're going to develop coping skills and the other skills that they need to be resilient. They're going to win, they're going to lose, they're going to grow.
Absolutely. But even the kids in sports, if we don't talk to them about how they're feeling and the results of the failure, and we just say things like, oh, you'll get them next time, or be tough, or, you know, it's okay to lose. Like, it's also okay to be upset that you lost, and it's okay to fail, but okay, what are you going to do about it? Don't get bitter about it. Let's get better about it. It's I've seen it and I saw it myself growing up, that it's very easy for people to just say, you know, you don't need to have, you know, you don't need to have any emotions about this. And that's not self-awareness. Part of self-awareness is recognizing this makes me angry. I'm frustrated by this, but I'm going to own my emotions rather than letting my emotions own me. And I think so many kids and, you know, high schoolers and into college and then even into young professionals, we don't talk enough about our emotions, and then they end up owning us. And then that's when your employees eventually go, I'm so frustrated here. I don't know what to do about this. I'm going to just go find another place to work.
Exactly. And that's, it could be addressed so much younger. And in fact, you thought high school maybe was younger than what I was thinking. I was thinking that it starts as soon as possible. It starts when the kids are, you know, even in preschool and kindergarten. And I think as adults, we have power to ask questions, right? So you talk about, you have this pack of 25 questions. So when a child expresses disappointment in something, instead of saying, well, you know, you're also great at this, or you'll get them next time, how about asking the question, well, tell me more about that. How does that make you feel?
Yeah,
let them talk it out. And that's the easiest thing. Doesn't cost any money whatsoever. And again, now we're leaders in corporate America, and we're also saying things like that to our employees. Oh, you know, well, you'll get your numbers up next month, or you've just got to work harder. We don't know what's in the backpack. We need to ask the questions. So I think it's a healthy way that you're bringing this topic into corporate America. I'm definitely, you know, seeing the application. There's another thing that you mentioned that intrigues me, which is leading from where you are, because a lot of rank and file employees don't consider themselves leader. And so that is a problem. I want to talk a little bit about that with you.
Yeah. So I say that leadership is not a one day thing, as in one day I'll get there. I believe leadership is a 2-day thing. Like, what can I do today to be a leader? And it's less about the title, the authority, whatever role you have. To me, leadership is a verb, and it's about leaving others better than you found them. And every single human on this earth can do that. My 6-year-old, even though he is knuck and futz and drives me up a wall some days, he still leaves me better than he finds me. Most days he has the ability to bring a smile to my face. To me, that's leadership. So when we say lead from where you are, it's about being able to say, what can I do today? What will I do today? What are the opportunities that are out there for me to practice leadership, regardless of what my title is, regardless of where I am in this organization? I could be the person who sweeps the floor or the person who signs the check. I have the same ability to leave someone better than I found them every single day. It might be taking time to sit down and have a conversation with them. It might be when you're walking through the grocery store and you like someone's shirt that you comment on it, or you say thank you to the person who's checking you out at the grocery store, or you ask someone in your department who seems like they're struggling and you're not the boss, hey, you seem like you're struggling. What can I do to help you out today? Is everything okay? That's leadership. It's why in one of my sessions, I ask people to create an awesome sauce list, which is really, we take 5 to 10 minutes and we take time to write down all the things that you have done in the last 2 years that you have done to help someone else. And if you don't stop and think about it, you're probably missing tons of opportunities to do it. And I think it's important that we stop placing leadership, like I said, on that pedestal and start making it a, hey, I'm going to do it today. It doesn't matter what my title is. I can do that.
That's the big tie into kindness. Kindness can be expressed at any age by any person at any time.
And it's
if we start there, how accessible is it? It makes it completely accessible to anyone.
Every single person. I ask my kids, if you were to ask my 2 sons, Calvin and Cooper, what do I tell them before we go to school every single day, before we get out of the car? They'll say, today I'm going to be awesome and I'm going to be kind. And that's
lovely.
At the end of the day. And at the end of the day, you know, to tie it back into questions, I'll ask them, what did you do that was kind for somebody today? Or did anybody do anything kind for you? And when we, that, and that's the key piece of it too, is it's not just like setting this out there as an intention of, I want to be more resilient, or right. I want to be a better leader, or I want to be more kind, right? Whatever our goal is, to go back to the question on what can our supervisors be thinking about for 2024, I would say whatever you do, make sure you think about it, talk about it, write about it regularly. It's why I ask them at the end of every day, what did you do that was kind today? Because if we just put it out there as the mantra, and then we don't actually look for the opportunities to do it and talk about it, then you're not actually changing the culture of your organization.
I also think it's helpful to track and measure, right? Because in corporate America, you always have to have a bottom line, and you have to show how the skill building and these behaviors and this cultural shift is then going to benefit the company, right? Mm-hmm. In the bottom line, in profit and loss, in how long an employee will stay with a company, retention. Yeah. How do you talk to companies about that?
So I think that culture is a really difficult thing to measure. But I would say more than anything, it is important that we look at the retention of our employees and the satisfaction of our employees. And it can't just be a once a year, one time thing. So many organizations that I work with will just do a once a year employee engagement survey. And then they put some strategies in place. They work on them for a few months. And then here I am 6, 7, 8 months later. And they're like, hey, we're struggling with this thing. And if there isn't actual like structure to what we're doing, which is why I don't just do a keynote, I'm going to leave you with resources on, these are the questions we can ask our employees. And I'm going to talk to you about how we can train your people to be better at reward and recognition. You know, there are studies on studies on studies that show how if we better train our managers to connect and make our employees feel more human, we're going to change the culture. And I'll share that with people before we do any work. They're like, this is why this is important. And then these are some things that you can be asking your people on a regular basis in a pulse survey. So it's not just a once a year, but it should be ultimately up to that individual manager in terms of how it's measured.
Yeah. And I think the continuous feedback loop, what you just said about a pulse survey, today we've got tools that are so interactive and even, you know, intelligent, right? They're learning as people respond. If it could be used responsibly, I think that that's something that would really forward what you're talking about and just keep it ever present in front of everyone. I couldn't agree more that the once a year thing is so 1980 and it just doesn't work.
It doesn't, you know, and it's funny, most organizations do a great job of surveying their customers and their patients. And we ask 1,000 questions and we all care about things like net promoter score. Well, what about like an employee promoter score? Like, well, that doesn't really exist unless you create it for your organization and measure it and actually have conversations. And there's tools out there, you know, organizations like Gallup have tons of tools on employee engagement. And I don't work for Gallup, but I would say, look at what the tools that are out there, because there's so many things that you could use to keep your employees engaged.
Definitely. Well, I know people are going to want to know more about you as a speaker and the workshops that you do and all the tools. What's the best way for them to get more information, Nick?
Yeah, that's a great question, Don. I hope people have found this valuable. I would say the best place is my website, which is chasingtheawesomelife.com. But like I said earlier, I've got those questions for that employees wish that their managers were asking them. It's like one of them, for example, is what are your personal development goals for the coming month and the coming year? You know, more employees wish that their managers would ask stuff like that. So I'd love to give those to your listeners. So if they just want to send me a DM, right, they could slide into my DM, as the kids would say, and just send me a DM. All you need to do, just send me the word awesome. That's it. You don't need to do anything else except for send me the word awesome. And you can find me on pretty much every single social media, and you don't have to worry about spelling my last name. You can just search awesome Nick D. That's why we go by that, because it's Chasing the Awesome Life. And it's all about how can we make the world and work a little more awesome. So Facebook is awesome, Nick D, LinkedIn, Instagram, YouTube, just Awesome Nick D. Shoot me a message with the word awesome, and I will gladly send you those questions.
Well, that's fabulous. And we will also support that. Obviously, in the podcast notes, we can repeat that information so that, it'll be there for people when they're listening. Awesome. And at the end of the podcast, they'll be able to go back to it and reference it. So, Nick, thank you so much for sharing your personal story, which I think anchored this entire conversation, and then just really like blowing it up so that we got the full picture. It's absolutely really been enlightening. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
This has been the Evocative Exchange that explores people and businesses that have that X factor that keeps you inspired and focused on what's possible.